About 11 the next morning, a bondsman came around so I could sign the bond. He had the embalmed look of all bondsmen, as though paraffin had been injected under the skin. My lawyer, Tig, showed up around 12 o'clock to check me out. He had made arrangements for me to go directly to a sanitarium to take a cure. He told me the cure was necessary from a legal point of view. We drove to a sanitarium in a police car with two detectives. This was part of the lawyer's plan, and the detectives fitted in as possible witnesses. When we stopped in front of the sanitarium, the lawyer pulled some bills out of his pocket and turned to one of the cops. "Put this on that horse for me, will you?" he said. The Dick's frog eyes bugged out with indignation. He made no move to take the money. "I'm not going to put any money on a horse," he said. The lawyer laughed and tossed the money onto the seat of the car. "Mac will," he said. This apparent tactlessness in paying off the cops in front of me was deliberate. When they asked him later what was the idea, he said, "Why, that boy was too sick to notice anything. So if these two cops were called as witnesses, they would say I seemed in very bad shape." The point was, the lawyer wanted witnesses who would testify I was in bad shape at the time I signed the statement. An attendant took my clothes, and I lay down on the bed waiting for a shot. My wife came to see me and reported that the management did not know anything about junk or junkies. When I told them you were sick, they said, "What's the matter with him?" I told them you were sick and that you needed a shot of morphine, and they said, "Oh, we thought it was just a question of a marijuana habit." "A marijuana habit?" I said. "What in hell is that? Find out what they plan to give me," I told her. "I need a reduction cure. If they aren't going to give me one, check me out of here right now." She came back shortly and told me she finally got a doctor on the phone who seemed to know what the score was. This was the lawyer's doctor, who was not connected with the sanitarium. He seemed surprised when I told him you hadn't had anything. He said he would call the hospital right away and see that you were taken care of. A few minutes later, a nurse came in with a hypo. It was Demerol. Demerol helps some, but it is not nearly as effective as codeine in relieving junk sickness. A doctor came that evening to give me a physical examination. My blood was thick and concentrated by loss of body fluid. During the 48 hours I had been without junk, I lost 10 pounds. It took the doctor 20 minutes to draw a tube of blood for a blood test because the thick blood kept clotting in the needle. At 9 p.m. I got another shot of Demerol. This shot had no effect. The third day and night of junk sickness are generally the worst. After the third day, the sickness begins to recede. I felt a cold burn over the whole surface of my body, as though the skin was one solid hive. It seemed like ants were crawling around under the skin. It is possible to detach yourself from most pain. Injury to teeth, eyes, and genitals presents special difficulties, so that the pain is experienced as neutral excitation. From junk sickness, there seems to be no escape. Junk sickness is the reverse side of junk kick. The kick of junk is that you have to have it. Junkies run on junk time and junk metabolism. They are subject to junk climate. They are warmed and chilled by junk. The kick of junk is living under junk conditions. You cannot escape from junk sickness any more than you can escape from junk kick after a shot. I was too weak to get out of bed. I could not lie still. In junk sickness, any conceivable line of action or inaction seems intolerable. A man might die simply because he could not stand to stay in his body